Hello, here's your KVNF regional newscast for Friday, February 9th. Colorado Republican Senator Larry Crowder has been accused of sexual harassment by a fellow lawmaker and has been to Berkeland Reports. An outside investigator found the complaint credible.
Democratic Representative Susan Lontine filed the complaint in November. She said Crowder pinched her buttocks and made an inappropriate sexual comment. In 2015 and 2017, she asked for an apology, which she got, but says Crowder never admitted to doing anything wrong.
I think if Senator Crowder had acknowledged his behavior and apologized to me about his behavior and taken some personal responsibility for it, we would not be sitting here.
Crowder denies the allegations in the complaint and, in a written statement, said he was sincere when he apologized. Lontine says she hopes coming forward will make it easier for other women to share their own experiences. I'm Benta Berkeland.
A new bill introduced in the Colorado House this week would increase tax credits for families that pay out-of-pocket for child care. The bill, which has bipartisan sponsorship, has yet to receive a fiscal note that would identify the measure's potential impact on state revenues. Eric Galatis has the story.
Lawmakers in Colorado have introduced a measure aimed at helping working families struggling with rising child care costs. The bill would allow families earning $25,000 a year or less to bump their state credit from the current 50% to 80% of what they get from the federal tax credit. Natalie Wood with the Bell Policy Center believes the move would be a smart investment.
A tax credit for working Colorado families to help pay for childcare is a pretty direct and efficient way to help them with the rising, painful childcare costs that they're facing. It helps people go to work. It's really infrastructure for our state.
Wood points to a recent report by Congress's Joint Economic Committee that shows improving access to affordable childcare would lead to more women entering and staying in the workforce and could increase the national GDP by as much as $600 million annually. Wood adds that access to high-quality early learning leads to improved health outcomes for children and better wages as adults. Rich Jones, also with Bell, says Colorado families are being squeezed by rising housing, health care, and child care costs at the same time that their earnings are falling flat.
We did some analysis that shows that average weekly wages in Colorado have only gone up $33 in total per week between 2000 and 2016 when you adjust for inflation.
The legislation was introduced by House Speaker Crisanta Duran, a Denver Democrat, and co-sponsored by Senator Beth Martinez-Humenick, a Thornton Republican. The bill was assigned to the House Finance Committee. A fiscal note outlining the potential cost of the measure to state coffers has not yet been added. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
8 years ago, an earthquake in northern Mexico set in motion a big change in how people think about the lowest reaches of the Colorado River. The quake destroyed irrigation canals, leaving farmers unable to use all of their water. So, Mexico began storing it in the U.S. And after a couple international agreements, the surplus temporarily flowed into the river's driest reaches. Luke Runyon covers the Colorado River Basin for public media stations in the West, and he looks at whether the water will be available in years to come.
It was called the Pulse Flow, and it happened in 2014. That's when the last dam on the Colorado River at the Mexican border was lifted, and water spilled into the final 100 miles of the dry riverbed. Here's how NPR covered it.
Recently, Mexican and American officials agreed and decided to lift the Morelos Dam.
Between the U.S. and Mexico, water is flowing to the Delta once again, temporarily.
The first time ever that water has been released to benefit the environment. It's called a pulse flow because it mimics a spring flood.
It was so intense, the Colorado River actually made it all the way to the Pacific Ocean for the first time in 20 years. Kids who'd never seen it in its natural channel splashed and played, birds returned, and trees and marshes greened up. But within a few months, it was dry again.
The pulse flow was in 2014, and we're, you know, almost 4 years after, and the community is trying to find ways to restore a portion of the river there because what they experienced during the pulse flow.
Francisco Zamora is the director of the Colorado River Delta Program at the Sonoran Institute in Tucson, Arizona. He had a role in making the pulse flow happen. So many of you might be wondering the same thing that listener Glenn Patterson asked us.
Are we likely to see more such pulse flows and perhaps more frequently or for a longer time? Thanks.
And that's exactly what Zamora and a group of environmentalists and scientists are now trying to figure out. A key consideration of any future releases is to apply what they found out from the first one. Jennifer Pitt is the Colorado River Program Director with the National Audubon Society. I caught up with her at a water conference in Las Vegas.
It enabled us to learn so much about how water moves through that ecosystem that we really had no way of knowing because there haven't been regular flows in that reach of the river for decades.
And here's the biggest takeaway. Because the delta is so dry and the water table so low, the vast majority, more than 90% of the pulse flow, just seeped into the sandy riverbed. It boosted the groundwater, but it didn't stay on the surface long enough to provide a huge benefit to the birds and people.
So with what we learned, we are now applying an approach to water deliveries that is trying to optimize the benefit we get for vegetation regrowth, for the birds, to keep the birds happy, and for people.
That new approach is one piece of a U.S.-Mexico agreement signed last fall. It calls for more water to be used specifically for environmental restoration in the Delta over the next 8 years. Pitt is a member of a panel tasked with divvying up the water. Going forward, she says, don't expect simulated floods. Releases will be more targeted and spread out over time.
But it doesn't mean that there won't be flows through the channel that reach the sea. They may not look exactly like the 2014 pulse flow did, but we have more water to work with under the new minute than we did under the last, and we're excited to see what we can do.
But Francisco Zamora is concerned about the decades of environmental degradation the Delta has already experienced. All of this would be a lot easier, he says, if there was just more water to go around. But the Colorado River is already overdrawn. Do you feel hopeful for the Colorado River Delta?
I do. Yes, I do. Despite the fact of, you know, the conditions in the basin, the climate and the water supply, I think what we have learned during the last 20 years gives me hope.
What's wrapped up in all of this, though, is a recognition between the two countries that rely on the Colorado River that they can do very little by themselves. Both the U.S. and Mexico will have to work together, and each will have to give something up in order to restore the river's driest areas. I'm Luke Runyon.
This story was produced in partnership with public media station KUNC in Northern Colorado, with financial support by the Walton Family Foundation. And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Friday. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks for listening.